Blog Talk Radio.
Don't go to bed with no price on your head.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to What Time Is It? The Folks Life International Web Radio Show about watches and the people. Hello, everyone. My name is Jerome Pinault, speaking to you from Switzerland. Welcome to the show. We're live today here with a very special guest and, of course, my beautiful co-host, Mina Goltz from Los Angeles. Hello, Mina.
Hello, Jerome. It is definitely early here, 7:30. Some people might think that's the crack of dawn, depending upon your schedule. But I'm ready to go.
You're ready to go. Okay, folks, let me remind everybody, this is a live show. This means you can actually get to talk to us, and more importantly, to our amazing guest today. The number here is area code 760-683-2652. 760-683-2652. Of course, dial 001 from Europe and Switzerland if you're going to call us from there. I remind you, this is the only live show where you, dear listeners, get to call in and talk to watch industry movers and shakers, mano a mano, one-on-one. And so today, Mina, I am sitting in the offices of a gentleman. His name is Jörg Heisek. And Jörg Heisek is one of the most prized, most famous watch designers in the world. He's been called the Philippe Stark of watch design. And I'm in his offices here in a little town called Luynes. Not sure how to pronounce that in English. Anyway, Jörg has worked for some tiny little brands, you know, like Rolex, Breguet, Cartier, Ebel. He's done stuff for Tag. He's done things for Seiko. He started his own company. And now he runs an outfit called HD3. They just released a project called Speed, which was amazingly successful at GTE. Without further ado, I'm going to welcome Jörg Heisek here on the show. Hello, Jörg. How are you? Thank you for coming.
Yes, hello. It's a pleasure to be here, to be together with you. And I'm fine with that, and I have the pleasure to start the show together.
Awesome, Jörg. Listen, I want to talk to you a little bit about your background and how you became, you know, the legend you are today. I know you were born in 1953. You have you studied at the Central Art School in London. I think you studied sculpture. I'm not sure. Can you walk us through how a genius like yourself is born and trained? What did you learn? How do you get to where you are? How did you become a designer? How did you start out?
Yeah, that's true. I started in Switzerland. I was more in a technical school. And very, very fast, in a very short time, after 2 years, I have seen that I don't have so much pleasure in the technical school. Was two reasons. I think was too, the limit of my life was too strong, and was only one girl in the whole school. I was 18 years old in that time, and then I was thinking it's time to change. And I was lucky because my father, he really understand that, and I say I want to make a full free job. And I want to go in an artistic job. In that time, I don't really know I want to go in painting or sculpture. And then very fast, I find a good place in Germany for making painting and sculpture. And after that, I go to London, and was a really wonderful time. And I make sculpture in aluminium. And, of course, in that time, you are young, and always I have the feeling that my sculpture was exceptional, but I never sold any piece. And then when I come back from the school, my father say, okay, I'm happy that you are happy with what you're doing, but now it's time that you make your own money.
Make some money, right.
Yeah, that was time. In that time I was 22 or 23 years old. And what can I say? I was in Switzerland, and then I have to make a decision. What can I do in Switzerland with sculpture? To make cheese or chocolate is no reason. And but in the watch industry, I will say a watch is very similar to a sculpture. But it's much smaller, and that was quite new on that time. And then I start to make some drawings. And I was very lucky because I just started by Rolex to be Hoya. Then I worked for 3 years by Rolex. That was the beginning.
How did you get into Rolex? Did you just apply?
That was very lucky. I make drawings from watches, but I really had nothing to do with the Rolex look. But I will say the presentation of the drawings was very artistic. And the people there was they like very much my presentation, and they say, okay, why not? You can start here. And I learned really a lot of things there, especially to come a little bit more serious. And of course, but after 3 years, when I make so many drawings there, was not very motivating for me to, because there were never a watch coming out by Rolex what I designed. And then I say, okay, now it's time for me to start to make my own company.
Right. So when you started out, did you have mentors who helped you out? Did you go to people? Did you have support, or were you pretty much on your own and just kind of left to your own, you know, talent and
I would say that I have really worked alone on that, because on that time you don't have really freelance designer in the watch industry. You have perhaps only two or three. And but what was different with today you have big groups, you know, you have two or three groups, they have many, they have the companies, but in that time all the brands was completely independent and was very easy to call or to have contact with them. You just take the telephone, you make the number, and then you say, I want to talk with the boss, and then you can really talk to the boss and have a meeting with them, and then you make the presentation of the drawings. And I sold in that time, I just sold the drawings.
Those days are long gone, are they not?
That was in 1975, between 75 and 80.
Right. So then off you go and you start working for Breguet and Cartier and Ebel. I mean, all these people. How did you go just from one to the next, or were you doing a few of them at the same time?
This is always just a little bit of a success story. The first one was really Ebel. I make drawings, and then I had contact with Pierre Lambloum, who was really the boss in that time from Ebel, and he say, okay, I like very much your work. You can make all our design. And then when you have one success in one company, because in that time there was no really freelance, there was only two or three freelance designers on the market. And then when you have one success on the market, then all the other people start to call, can you make a drawing for me? Can you make a drawing
right,
for me?
Right.
And
right.
Then I start to work with other companies.
So you get to that point. You get everybody and his mother's calling you. Everybody and his mother wants a piece of Jorg. How do you pick your clients? I guess you got to be real careful, right? You can't overextend yourself. You got to pick not just a lot of clients, but you got to pick the right clients. How do you make that call when you're just starting out?
I will say, of course, you have to take the right clients, but also every client has, I will say, history. And there has already an image when you make a Ebel or you make a Tag Heuer or you make a Breguet, it's completely different. And I would say it's very important for a designer to work with the history of the brand. You don't can change the whole story. It's
right.
Different when there's a brand what have not so big success and say, okay, you come and make me a completely new product. But normally, especially by Breguet, they say, okay, we have a story, we won't have a new product, but you have to see and feel that it's a Breguet. And, of course,
right.
You can only work, I say, with three or four brands per year. You don't can work with 10 brands at the same time.
Right, got it. Hey, do you have any opinions? Who do you think are the most promising new watch designers in the world on the market now? Are you keeping your eyes on the new guys? Do you have an opinion on that? You have a couple of people you think, hey, geez, you know, these guys are really promising, or gals for that matter.
No, it is a big change in that job. I will say that especially the computer design changed a lot. When I was starting, you have to make all your design by hand. And then when you make the presentation, I will say that the marketing people can recognize that you have an artistic feeling because you have very good, you make good drawings and you have experience in that job. But when the computer coming out, then also a lot of people starting to make drawings by the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
For the different people that were not coming from this, more the marketing people, they see that the drawing looks very good, but they not see 100% that the idea is very good. And then now is a change, but 10 years ago,
we
have so many products that looks very similar.
Got it.
And
I think we got a... I'm sorry. I think we got a caller here. I'm going to see who's calling us. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good day. You're on the air. Do you have a question for your caller? Where are you calling from? Hello. Hello,
yes,
caller.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes. We have a 949 caller. That sounds like California. Are you on the air, caller?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yes. Do you have a question for York? Thanks for calling.
No, I'm just listening right now.
You're just listening. You don't have a question. All right, so we'll go back to the show. Enjoy the show. Take care. All right, I'm sorry, Jorg. That happens sometimes.
Problem.
Hey, listen, I want to talk a little bit about Fabrice and Valérie. There are two people you've surrounded yourself with for, I believe, about 15 years. They're your partners in crime. They're the people you work with every day. Tell us a little bit how you met him, how long you've been... Have you been working nonstop with him for 15 years? And just tell me a little bit how it works.
Yeah.
How does the trio work?
That is, I say, of course, it's a very wonderful story, especially Fabrice. He was coming now it's nearly 18 years and joined me. He was coming and to make a presentation of the drawing, what he did, and he was asking a different art school to go in the art school, and there was no chance for him to go there. And then I just looked at the drawing, and I have seen that he has talent. And then I said, okay, you can start, of course. And the beginning was a very, very low salary, but already after 6 months he has a good salary because he already after 6 months he make wonderful drawings. And especially in the designer job, it's not the question of the paper you have or the school you have made. It's a question of what is your personal talent. And now we work together with 18 years, and that's just a wonderful story. And with
right.
Valérie is the same. Huh?
Yeah, and I take it his salary got a lot better now too, right?
Of course, though, that changed after 18 years. You can imagine that it's not the same salary.
So how do you? I guess you're kind of the pack leader. How do you manage this? Do you have the final word, or do you guys? Is it a consensus type of management? How do you make decisions, all three of you?
No, because it's not. I don't can say that Fabrice is not a salary. He is a partner, you know. And the decision is that what is important. But when we make, especially in the design, it's difficult to make it everything alone. And when I make a drawing or Fabrice make a drawing, and then I say I think it will look better like that. It's not the critic is ready to make the product better, and we never feel upset or like that. You really have the feeling that each remark is to help the product to come better, and that helped us. And the respect from each designer. Sometimes when a designer work alone, and then another comes out and have just a remark, then sometimes they feel bad or have a bad reaction. But here it's absolutely like a family. Huh?
Yes, that's the feel I got from being here. Hey, listen, there's a quote from you on the web somewhere. It's something about you said I hate financial people. They interfere in the creative process. Such people have completely taken over the industry. I guess my question is, without that money though, would it have been possible for you to succeed as much as you did? And so what's your thought on that now?
I don't know exactly the question, but what I mean about the financial people is very often, more and more now, when you make a presentation to a brand, you make a presentation of a new product. And the first thing is let feel your emotion. And I hate when before the emotion comes out, the financial people comes and he has absolutely no experience in the design job and he make design remarks. Huh? When he has solution, I accept it every time. But when he has no solution, you just say some stupid things, and I have very often like that. And that is what I never accept. Huh?
So I guess you have a short fuse with those guys, and understandably so. Is that true for every brand and client, or the big ones,
the small ones?
No.
It's not relating with the brand. It's more relating with the people. You have people, you have a wonderful feeling, and
right.
they respect your work, and that is completely independent from the brand.
Got it. So I want to talk a little bit about HD3. Obviously, is HD3 a manufacturer on its own?
No, it's not really a manufacturer. We say we are HD3 is a brand, And we are, I would say, 80% in our, we are really designers. And AGH, we start now 7 years ago, and then we make very expensive products and very expensive watches. And we have now the watchmaker background. We have designer background. And then we work with watchmakers. And then we say, okay, we make a design. Then we say, okay, that's, it's acceptable. I think we can produce. But because we don't have the watchmaker background, I will say that sometimes the quality of the product was not 100%. And for us, it was very difficult because the watchmaker say it is good, but we just have to say, okay, when you say it's good, it's good. And then we
right.
had a very bad experience with the B&B story. And that's why
right.
we changed
so
completely B&B, our direction now.
B&B was a major supplier of yours, and they went bankrupt, right?
That was 80%. 80% of our product, the movement was made by B&B, and that's why we had a very hard year last year.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's kind of a disaster. Tell me, what is the message behind HD3? What are you trying to communicate with about? I mean, what's the message?
The message is, what can I say? It's really to do always changes in the design of the watch industry. That is what we want to do, and that is a designer always can say he's good when he's on the front of the design and he's not making copies or influencing of other products. And that's why we changed completely with this light product, because after bankruptcy of B&B, for us was a big decision to go back and to find other watchmakers. You know, I had the feeling from a designer point of view that we go back, and I have already that the feeling 2 years ago that the watch industry have to change, not the whole industry, but from a designer point of view, we have to change something. And that was the big decision, and that's why we change our product now with the slide product.
Right, because the slide product, and we think people have seen it on the web, and obviously we've seen it. Mina, you've seen it at GTE, obviously, right? It's kind of a UFO, right? I mean, I don't want to call it an anti-watch, but I mean, it's just mind-boggling. It's just a completely different way of looking at horology. I mean, am I wrong on that, or is that really part of the mystique
no,
behind it?
No, the approach, what is very important is that the people, of course, when you slide on the screen, you can say it's similar to the iPhone or like that, but we work on a completely watch philosophy. That means there'll be no gadget on it, there'll be only really watch movements, virtual watch movements, and we will work with watchmaker also. They will give us input to make other movements. And that is, to buy a watch is an emotional action. And I want that the slide will be a full watch with the new technology. Of course,
you
can make quickly a gadget, but that will be absolutely not a gadget.
Mina, you've seen the slide. I'd love to get your horology expert opinion on that. I mean, what do you say? What sayest thou, Mina?
I think the slide is a really progressive and forward-thinking approach to horology, and I really like the story behind it, and that you said after you mentioned that B&B went bankrupt, and that really I can imagine was a big blow to HD3 and making the movements, and you had this sketch from 2008, I believe, that you said that you made it during Christmas, and instead of being discouraged by what happened with B&B, you went and did this watch. So can you tell me a little bit more about the impetus for getting this done and what made you go back to this design?
I will say that the story starts, of course, first when was the big bankrupt, then the next 2 weeks you think everything is the end, your life is, your business life is finished and everything, but after 2 weeks you start again to think about in what direction you have to go. And then I had one evening, I drink with a good friend of mine, one bottle of wine, perhaps, I'm not sure, perhaps it was two, and then, after that, we say, we already push us and say we have to change something in the watch industry, especially for our philosophy. And that was the beginning. And from there was the first thing was ready, the first thing is to check out if it is possible to do it or not, because I have no experience in the electronic world, and I know it's possible, but you don't know it's possible in that size. And it was very important for us that it watches mean must be completely water resistant for 50 meter, must be a sapphire glass curved, and all that point we have first to check out. And from that, when we had a guy what called Alex, he's an engineer in the electronic, and then he checked it, and then when he say okay, it's possible to do, then we start with designing. And the design comes, I have one day I see a car, I don't remember, it was like a buggy, and then I see a part of that, and I see, now I see the watch, and then I start from this point, and then we start with Fabrice to design the design the watch.
Well, you know, there's the inevitable comparison to the iPod Nano, which has been converted to be on the wrist, and there's been all these funny wristbands that have been made. And I want you to explain, I mean, your watch is starting at $5,000, about U.S., or I think it's 4,000 euros, correct?
Yeah.
People are going to make that comparison, and you can get an iPod Nano and sort of have the similar experience by strapping it on your wrist. So I guess I would ask you, why would somebody pay, you know, so much more money to get a slide when they can sort of have a similar experience on their wrist with an Apple product?
I will say that is exactly the same why to compare Hublot, Rolex, or a tag with the Swatch. You know, the Swatch is exactly the same. The Swatch, you have three hands, or you have a chrono, and that's also only $100. Is the more the question of the emotion. It's true that the iPod Nano, you can read the time. You have many gadgets on it, but you then can compare. Some people have the Swatch one day, and then the next day they have is very happy to have an Omega or another brand. And the emotional part of the value is not only on the electronic. The value of the slide is, of course, because only every gadget what will be in the slide has to do with time. And the production cost and the quality of the material is a full titanium, is sapphire glass, is water resistant, is everything. It's completely done with the Swiss standard of the watch industry.
Jörg, if people want to learn more about the slide, where do they go? Can you give us the contact information?
What do you mean the contact information?
Well, give me your website. Give me your website.
Now it's not, the website is now it's not open. Now you have only the teaser on it. We will open the website with all the information, with the collection, with the technical background and everything. That will open 3 weeks before Basel. That's mean around the middle of March.
Got it.
Jörg, I have another question I'd like to ask you that was kind of a follow-up to the iPod Nano, and I understand what you're saying about having the emotion of a product. I wanted to ask you, you know, when you're dealing with electronics, it's a pretty disposable world, and about every year or so, people are updating their electronics, and this is an electronic product. It is a watch, but I wanted to know how you feel about that. Do you think it will be dated in a year, in 2 years? How do you respond to that?
We will have also. We have the upgrade of the software that will be the people who buy a slide today. They will always have the upgraded of the electronic, and in 2 or 3 years, of course, the display will change. You will have three-dimensional display, and we will follow up that evolution, of course. And with the three-dimensional display, you can make other things what you make today. For example, when you will have in the slide a tourbillon like that with the three-dimensional display, but that will be coming out only in 3 years, because today you have a three-dimensional display. Coming, but it's not really 100%. You have to have other glasses, or you don't have really the perfect view. And
so you're saying
we will follow.
We're going to have to get rid of the case.
Sorry, you speak together. Sorry,
To conclude, so you're saying that you can still have the case of the watch, and you can just make upgrades, so you don't have to get a completely new model.
That's true. That out there, of course, there. That's with the electronic by computer, you can make every time when we make an upgrade, they can have a free charge upgrade of his watch.
Awesome. Hey, we're gonna have to call it a day on the show because we're coming up on our 30 minutes there, Jörg. I want to thank you very much. I got a couple questions, if you don't mind. They're really quick questions, 2 seconds to answer. Can I ask you those questions now?
Yeah, please.
What's the brand you admire the most?
The Maya, what mean the what I find the best?
Yeah, the brand or person in the horology world.
And the brand, I prefer the brand, but 2 seconds is very difficult, so many there. Perhaps
that's
will
okay.
Be, Brugge, of course, Brugge is one of
okay.
the, for me, is a very big example.
What's the most important event in the history of your company, Jörg?
What is the most?
Important event in the history of your company?
The creation of the company. The first day.
Who's the most important
the
person in your life?
The Geneva Time Exhibition, I would say.
Okay. Who's the most important person in your life?
Of course, it's my wife.
Okay. And, Jörg, what is your favorite time of the day?
The aperitif time, 6 o'clock, between 6 and 8 o'clock.
We call it cocktail hour in the good old U.S., man, and I hear you loud and clear. Hey, I thank you so much for joining us today. This has been really eye-opening. I hope our audience enjoyed it. I know I did, and I'm sure you did as well, Mina.
Jörg, thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us.
Yep.
And thank you. It was a pleasure for me, too.
Listen, I'm Jerome Pinot, and I can be looked up at JeromePinot.com. And Mina's website is at, take it over, Mina.
I am at Mina Goldsmith. I'm at www.watchmatchmaker1word.com. I'd love
awesome.
To see you and visit with you there.
And thanks for listening again, everybody. Next week we have Stephen Forse on the show, and he'll be followed the week after that by Natalie Visset, who runs DeWitt. We have Jeff Kuo, Peter Speak Marine, and Richard Pieris, and of course Jean-Claude Biver coming on February 10th. And so we're going to have a lot of fun there. We're going to talk watches and cheese, and we're going to have a blast. I look forward to talking to everybody next week, and thank you very much for listening, everybody.
On your head. No, 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 no.